Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. This show airs every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. The Architect's newspaper says that brain tumor surgery left architect Chris Downey blind in 2008. After returning to work, vision loss gave Chris an unexpected strength. That strength led him to become a specialty consultant for architectural projects for the blind. Chris's architectural work encompasses specialized centers and public facilities. The facilities include the new Transbay Transit Center in San Francisco and the new Blind Rehabilitation Center at the VA Hospital in Palo Alto, California. Chris also teaches accessibility and universal design at UC Berkeley. Chris joins us to talk about how he spoke out to become a blind architect. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Well, thanks, Brian. Hello.
Let's first talk about your vision. How did you lose your vision after having brain tumor surgery?
It was an unintended consequence of surgery. The day after surgery, things were fine going according to plan. The day after, the sight started to fail. On the third day, it was gone. And about a week later, they said there was nothing more they could do, that the sight was gone. That was my new normal.
So in a few days, the vision was gone.
Yes.
How did you decide to become an architect, and how did you speak out about your abilities to do the job?
Well, that was something I decided as a kid, and so I was sighted at the time. I didn't lose my sight until I was 45, so I was really excited as a kid. Our family had designed a house with an architect and had it built, and so I grew up experiencing that process, looking at the drawings, watching the house getting built, and having fun with the construction site.
As an architect, you have the title with an acronym, AIA. What do the letters stand for, and what's required to have this title?
That's the American Institute of Architects. And to be to join that professional organization, you have to have a professional or an architectural degree, typically a professional degree, number of years of experience, and you have to have passed the licensing exam. Then you can join the American Institute of Architects.
What's that licensing exam like exactly? What types of questions do they ask you?
Well, it's lots of different things. It's a four-day exam, multiple sections each day, with the exception of the final day, which is a design exam. And so it goes through structural issues, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, site design, building design, human factor. It goes through a number of things. It's a pretty intense test.
Let's move on and talk about your job now as an architect. You have a website, www.arch4blind.com. It says that you use a very special approach to your work. What's that special approach?
Well, it's just really rooted in sort of my 20 years of sighted experience as an architect and all my training combined with my new non-visual processes for working in architecture. And a key aspect of that is tactile drawings and the ability of to print the architectural files directly through an embossing printer, a large format embossing printer, so I could read the drawings through touch. I've also developed ways to draw primarily using wax sticks or wiki sticks directly on the embossed drawings, so that I can participate in the design process through those drawings.
And one of our listeners, Ann Morrow, a good friend of mine out of Mount Sinai, New York, how you make the plans for the buildings being blind. That's how you do it, through the embossing process, right?
Well, that's how I read the drawing. There's nothing I can do to actually do the drawing into the computer, at least not yet. That technology might develop soon. But at this point, I can print drawings, whether they're, you know, an existing building that I'm working on or a site plan that I'll be working with, or the existing design drawings that have been drawn by other architects. I can take those drawings, print it through the embossing printer, read it, engage it with it, think about it, try to identify issues, work with particular challenges, and using these wiki sticks, draw directly on top of that embossed plan to communicate with the other members of the team. So either we can discuss the issue through that process. If it's something that's worthwhile, they can then take that image. Sometimes I'll just send them a photograph of that, a digital photograph of the drawing, email it to them. They can draw it up on the computer, or I can meet with them in person and they can then draw it up.
So your LinkedIn page says that you're the principal of Architecture for the Blind. Tell me about that business and your role as principal.
Okay. Well, I'm like the principal, I'm the CEO, I'm the chief bottle washer and trash removal guy. Yeah, it's a one-man operation. So that's me. But it really involves a lot of different types of work, different projects that I'm involved with, research projects, the teaching, public speaking, lecturing for departments of architecture. So there's a lot of different things that I'm doing through that. The core of that work is the being a consulting architect.
You've also worked for other firms, Ashdown Downey LLP, Michelle Kaufman Designs, and Holt Henshaw. What are these companies? What did you do for them? And how did you speak out to fulfill your roles?
Well, Holt Henshaw was the firm that I worked with out of graduate school at UC Berkeley. And there I was started as a project manager for a public aquarium in Duluth, Minnesota. And we did a lot of things like aquariums, theaters, wineries, residential work, retail work, a lot of different things. And I went from sort of a young project manager to becoming a principal in that firm. And had been there until I left that firm to start a new company with another principal from there, Dwight Ashdown. And that was the Ashdown Downey you made reference to in your question. And was with we were together for about 4 years doing retail work like stores, residential work, residential projects, and some winery work, various different types of things. And then eventually left that to join Michelle Kaufman Designs, where they were doing prefabricated modular homes. So these were homes that were very green, very sustainable. They were built in factories and shipped to site where the site work was being done there locally. And it was just a way to save money, be more environmentally conscious, and to provide very good, very high-level green design at a more cost-effective level. So there's a sort of range of things I was doing before I lost my sight. And actually, I was working with Michelle Kaufman Designs when I lost my sight.
You have a unique perspective as a blind architect. You discuss this more on your website. How do you use that unique perspective as a blind architect to facilitate a greater clarity, better integration, and overall design for critical tools, such as the blind's access to information?
Right. It's funny, the architects, you know, are heroically visual animals. You know, we think through things in very visual ways, and we're very, you know, we deal with the environment, we work with it, but we tend to do it mostly through sight. And what was differentiating was to then deal with it, focus on other senses, and that's always something that makes a lot of sense in architecture, because it's how all those things come together to make a fully rich and enjoyable environment. But oftentimes we tend to forget that. So in many ways, this was an opportunity for me to focus on those other sensory components of architectural space, of design, and use it to really work towards a more rich and fulfilling architecture. Now, obviously, if I'm designing, doing work that's specific to the blind and visually impaired, then there are obvious insights that come into play there that could be of benefit, whether it's thinking strategically about the design of landmarks and cues in the environment, or other things. We're working with a multi-sensory palette, and sometimes it's just a matter of my thinking about, you know, if everyone's thinking about delightful architecture, if it's seen, I'm very curious and concerned about delight in architecture if it's not seen or if it's not dependent on sight.
You play three roles as an architect. You work as a client representative, you work as a designer, and you work as a member of a user engagement team. How do you play these three roles in your job?
Well, it tends to be different. Different projects will I'll take on different roles. And sometimes it makes sense for me to really look out from the client side towards the project. Other times, and most often, I'm engaged directly with the design team as a consulting architect. There are cases like I'm engaged and involved with a new office for the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco. And there I'm somewhat on the client side because I'm the second vice president of the Lighthouse for the Blind. So I'm on the client side, but I'm also on the consultant side where I consult directly to the team. And so that's interesting in that on one hand, with one hat, I'm looking at issues as the client, looking out for our best interests, looking out for things financially with regards to the program, advising directly the executive director, Brian Bastian, other members of the board, the president, Josh Mille. So I'm very involved on that side, bringing all my experience over the years to the benefit of the client. But then when I put on my client, my consultant hat, I'm working directly with the architect, trying to have the advantage of bringing in sort of the really embedded knowledge of the organization and the concerns, not just of the organization, but also of those that are blind and visually impaired. And be able to work directly with them in a more creative way to embed that kind of knowledge and experience into the work that's being done for the design of the new headquarters.
How did you become the Lighthouse's vice president, and what's been some of the other work you've done with them?
Well, that's sort of a funny story. I was the prior executive director, Anita Aaron, had been hearing about my work in San Francisco as an architect, and I was just popping up in odd places. And one day, she and her husband were out looking at a tandem bike shop, and were looking at testing out some tandems. And the bike shop owner, told her of a guy he had just sold a blind rider. He had just sold a bike to a few months earlier. And this guy named Chris Downey. So she's like, "That's it. I've heard his name too many times. I need to meet him." And so she and Gil Johnson, who was at the time the president of the board, reached out, spent some time with me, and we got to know each other. And they invited me to join the board. And so, you know, I've been on the board since about 2010, I believe it is, maybe 2009. Don't recall exactly right at this moment. And I'm still on the board as the second vice president. I'm also the director of the development committee, and I've been involved actively with our project as it's evolved over time to develop our new headquarters. And so I'm also on the move committee for doing that as well.
How did you design the new Transbay Transit Center in San Francisco? And how did you do the renovations for the blind housing development in New York? And how did you work on the new Department of Veterans Affairs Blind Rehabilitation Center for the clients and ensure the accessibility of these three places?
Okay, well, they're three very different projects. And in all cases, it's important to remember that I'm a member of the team. And in saying that I designed these things, I was really advising part of the team that was doing it. In the case of the design of the Transbay Transit Center. That's a tremendous, is a huge project. It's a 4-block-long project, right in downtown South of Market, San Francisco. And that project was very much, actually, it's so big. It was under construction. It was in design long before I lost my sight, and was well underway when I lost my sight. And I joined the team probably about 2.5-3 years after I lost my sight. So it was actually, they'd already demolished the old building and started digging the hole when I joined the team. So the building was very much designed, and I really joined them to help deal specifically with issues related to the blind experience of making sense of a multimodal transit facility that's 4 blocks long with a bus deck up on the third floor that you had to get to, and then you have to find the bus. And that's really sort of the majority of the work is related to that kind of issue. So there I'm really trying to think strategically about the series of landmarks and cues that make sense in that environment, either intentional or things that can be done additionally to make that a more manageable experience. And also dealing with possible technologies that could help identify specific bus lines that you're looking for. But there are all sorts of things that have been involved with. There's a roof park about how people can move more effectively on that roof deck. Also the city street engagement with the city streets around it, as well as the Muni bus plaza at street level for finding your city bus once you get across the bridge. So there's lots of different things there. The Associated Blind Housing in New York was with a firm in New York. So I was consulting with them, and there they didn't have any specialized knowledge in the design of a facility for the blind. It's an existing facility that was completed in about 1980, and this was their first major renovation. So there, again, I was working with sort of typical strategies of landmarks and cues, multisensory design, did some courtyard work, some gardens, and really tried to sort of develop tactile palettes that made sense between walking areas versus seating areas, arranging benches so that people's feet weren't sticking out into the walkways, having good access to planting areas, but also the same sort of things in throughout the building, and anticipating how people that are blind and visually impaired would move through the space. Let's see, in the Polytrauma and Blind Rehabilitation Center for the VA in Palo Alto, that was a very different project in that I was actually sort of working directly in the offices with the firm that was doing the work, the Smith Group in San Francisco, together with the design partnership. And so there I was working side by side, and it was really my first project that I did after losing my sight. And there was very much involved with the team, mostly about issues specific to the blind and visually impaired, but not limited to that. So there were some other things that I would work on with them, other contributions to that project and other things on the campus. And there was just a normal collaboration. But it was just important for them to have someone who understood the blind experience to be part of the team, and someone who's familiar with the process of rehabilitation for sight loss, because they, within the creative team, they had no understanding of that other than what they heard. So it was really trying to, I remember one thing, there was all this excitement about access to the grounds, to this major courtyard on the first level, and the blind rehab center is located on the second level. And to get there, you had to go either down the elevator or down the stairs, across a large lobby, down a large part of the hallway to get out into the courtyard. And it was supposed to be a place to go and relax. And I was like, you realize that if you're there for rehabilitation for sight loss, that's a long way away. it's not just hop down the stairs and go out the door. And so it affected things to the level of developing more meaningful outdoor spaces on the second floor which were more immediately available if you needed a chance to get outside and get some fresh air.
You talk regularly about your architecture work and your visual impairment too. You speak to the media and you make public appearances to do this. Give us just a couple or a few of your examples of your speaking engagements and the message that you share.
Well, they're pretty, so it goes across a pretty broad variety of types of settings for these talks. Some are large. Maybe a little over a year ago, I did a keynote address for a healthcare design conference. So that was for, the conference has about 4,500 attendees. So I spoke to a crowd of about 3,000 for their keynote address. And there I was talking about, there's a lot of interest in healthcare design for patient-centered design. And it's really designing to the patient experience as opposed to specifically or exclusively to the provider side. You know, what's it like to be there as a patient? And having done some work on some eye centers, I started pushing that towards design for the visually impaired patient-centered experience. So what's it like to design, in the case, an eye center, taking into consideration the experience of someone who's blind or low vision, and something that's often not done very well or thought of quite fully. So whether it's problems with direct light, glare, shadows, lack of contrast in the environment, all sorts of things, much less developing non-visual skills or anticipating how people might move through the hallways, whether they're with shoreline, how they would find things, where they might need, where we can logically anticipate where a good point of interception would be, where you might logically want to have a nurse station or something to help guide people around, so or point them in the right direction. So it was really sort of thinking through that and sharing that as an idea to the healthcare industry, healthcare design industry. And it's really something they hadn't really thought about a whole lot. There hadn't been a whole lot of attention on that. So that's one type. I also talked to schools of architecture, lots of professional architectural groups, chapters of the American Institutes of Architects, talk on green building, all sorts of things, and then also speak a lot with nonprofit organizations, people dealing with disability groups, disability rights groups. So it's all over the map.
I also understand that you recently received a gubernatorial appointment to the California Commission on Disability Access. What's this commission and how did you receive the appointment?
Well, the commission is a new commission that was formed a few years ago and really just this past year has gotten up to its full speed and critical mass. But it was really put together in recognition that despite the fact that it's been a good while since ADA was passed and a good while since the first accessibility codes were put into effect for the state of California, that there are still a large number of buildings and facilities that weren't in compliance and that there were a large number of lawsuits. So to some extent, there's a challenge for the commission to reduce the number of lawsuits. I like to think of it more as increase of compliance so that, you know, the number of lawsuits logically reduce. But it's really trying to work bridging between sort of small business concerns and the disability community to encourage and incentivize small businesses, especially in existing older buildings, to make the necessary upgrades for those buildings to be and spaces to become accessible. So it's really looking at how to do that. How do we, after all this time, how do we change opinions or how do we motivate a small business owner to make the investment to, in a sense, proactively make the upgrades rather than waiting for a lawsuit to force them to do it and then complaining that they were sued.
How can our listeners learn more about you and your architectural work, and even secure you as a speaker for an upcoming event?
Well, best way to find out about me is through my website. That's www.arch4blind.com. And in there, there's a list of projects, things that I do, contact information, also list public speaking events that I've done. There's an info site there, and I've just joined a speakers bureau, and that's not fully in up to speed yet, but it's called Fresh, so that'll be out there soon. It's a new speakers bureau, and that's something that grew off of TED Talk that I did last fall, and so it's building off of that.
Chris, you're an inspiration to us, and we all look forward to experiencing your accessible architecture designs now and into the near future. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's a pleasure. Thanks.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Hey, sports fans. Join us Friday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern for the World of Sports with John and Paul, right here on theradiostorm.com and ACB Radio Mainstream.